Welcome to the 50 Shades of Trade podcast. Today, I interviewed Nolan Gore. He's based out in Texas in the USA. He's got a military background. Then he invested his life savings in acquiring a lawn care business. He has the ambition to become the leading landscaping business in Texas over the next decade. And he recently went through an acquisition where they acquired a competitor, and he talks about the challenges there, growing to 85 employees. There's so much to learn. Do enjoy it. Do also leave us a review, like, comment, and share. It really helps us to get more guests like Nolan. Enjoy. Thanks for joining, Nolan. It'd be great to hear who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'll do the little quick intro so everyone knows where we're going with this thing. So I'm in Texas, born and raised in Austin, Texas, which when I was born was not near as cool as it is today, but has obviously grown quite a bit. I'm the son of a teacher, my mom, and my dad is a small business guy and sometimes not so small business. So I was the kid that ran around in the office and shot people with rubber bands. So I didn't think that small business was a weird thing. He ran a landscaping company back then and then ultimately a janitorial company. I didn't think that blue collar jobs or industries were strange. It was just kind of what I grew up around, even though I went to a fairly affluent school. And so my dad's job was very different than a lot of people's jobs that I was around, but it was awesome. So then I went to Texas A&M, which is a state school, nothing fancy there, studied business, went into the Marine Corps for 4 years. I was a combat engineer officer, deployed once, did another exercise overseas. We can talk about that if you're interested. And then I married my high school sweetheart right before I went into the Marine Corps. I did 4 years in the Marine Corps and then came out of that. And that's when I become interesting for you and your audience is I had the opportunity to buy into a little residential landscaping business. And the short version there is someone went to my dad. It wasn't like I did a formal search or anything, but someone went to my dad and said, "Hey, I own this. I know you know landscaping things." And my dad came to me and said, "Hey, it's not making any money. In fact, it's losing some money and it's really small. You want to put your life savings into it?" And I said, "That sounds like a really good idea." So we did. And so I've been doing that for 7 years now. We started at $1.6 million. And this year we should hit eight. We're really early in the year. So obviously that could change, but that's the goal. And I think it's doable. I now have 4 kids. Congrats. And that's my life at this point. I work out occasionally, but really it's just work and family and church. And then I work out once in a while. So there we go. Does that get it?
Awesome. Yeah, no, and it's great. I mean, I think like what first question is, what did actually make you make that decision to put in your life savings to do it? Like, did you look at other options? What actually drove that?
I was looking at MBA programs at that point because that's a good way to punt when you're getting out of the military. Mm. And so it prolongs your timeline to really make a decision on life. Mm. We had our first kid. But to answer your question, I don't think I am – maybe this is a fairly normal trait. I don't think it's a normal human trait. It's a fairly normal entrepreneur, small business trait. Which, by the way, side note, I don't really love the term entrepreneur because I didn't really start anything. I'm actually, I call myself a small business guy, like, because I haven't gone from zero to one. And that sounds really hard. That's not what I wanted to do. It's not what I ever want to do. And instead, I went from one to eight, you know. But really, I don't have a hard time making decisions. I don't have a hard time betting on myself. I will have a high tolerance for risk. And I had seen what a blue collar business could do for a family if run well. And on top of that, I had cheat codes. So I had a dad who's been one of the best in the world at this industry. And I have an uncle who's really good in this industry. And they've been doing it for a long time. And so while I wasn't doing exactly the same thing as them, their history is more in commercial and mine's in residential. I just knew I had a lot of access to really good brains in this world, and so that decreased the risk. And so, I mean, I don't remember that process very well. I don't remember like sitting up late at night trying to think through it. It was just sure, this sounds fun. Let's do it. And yeah. Joni, my wife, is we cool with this? Let's do it and go for it. And that I never looked back. I don't remember doubting it very much. I just moved, and a lot of this world just needs, like, the way to do it is just to get in and move at a reasonable bet that if you're wrong, you're not going to ruin your life. And if you're right, it can be extraordinary. And that's been my experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you talk about the MBA, because that's kind of how I feel about starting a business, which is like, I think a lot of people look at it and they think in a quite a risk averse way, like that's a huge risk to take on, like going and doing an MBA. But it's like, actually, what's the worst that can happen? You just get this incredible experience, and as long as you don't put your whole house on the line, then the downside isn't actually that bad. Like the risk isn't that big.
Yeah. So, especially when you're young. I mean, we could talk about all the different phases. Obviously, being young, you're not going to be near as good as when you're hopefully more experienced, but I was just sitting down with a guy last week who's 22 and got the chance to buy like a single van carpet cleaning business. And he's just like, his phrase at the end of our conversation was great. It was basically like, I'm 22. I can't screw this up that bad. I'm going to be fine if it doesn't work. But at the end of the day, I'm just going to learn so much. And I'm just so excited. And that's great. Like, if you can go into it, your first deal doesn't have to be a home run. It really doesn't. If you just want a base hit, you want to make a little bit of money to move into the next thing, or even zero money, but you learn a lot of lessons, you gain a lot of value that way. And why do we think we're going to hit home runs on our first deals? Like, that's not how life works at all. Like, we don't teach our kids that they're going to be good at soccer on their first play. Like, you got to go practice for years. So why do you think you're going to be good at business in your first year? Like, just go put yourself in a position to learn. I got really lucky as well. So I grew up running around a business, but I also grew up listening to thousands of hours of phone calls from my dad, right? I just sat in the car while he just ran businesses on his phone. Yeah. And then on top of that, I joined a business partner who was already in the business and we didn't know this at the time, but is a really good match to me. So he's much more systems oriented than I am. He's older than me, so he has a little bit more life experience, and we balance each other really well. So he's been a good assist to me, both emotionally, and we've had our problems, we can talk about that, but also he's been a really good assist to me on just like gaps in my knowledge as I was coming in. I had a lot of ideas, and he could tell me that was a stupid idea or a good idea or a let's try it and see idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to go to this till later, but I mean, I think you posted about this at one point about, I see, from what I understand, you went in with a 50-50 partnership and then had to sort of change that partway through. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so technically it wasn't a 50-50 partnership. I wrote that post like it was, but we were both 30-30 at that point because we had some outside investors too, but essentially equal day-to-day operational control and legal control. And I actually had this conversation with the guy last week about this as well, because he's a 50-50 partner. Mm-hmm. And one person on that, and I'll tell you our story, but I'll tell you the story and then I'll give you some takeaways. So we were even partners, again, 50-50 from a decision-making perspective. And I still have this problem where I just like see a problem. If I see a problem, I just like, this is actually a good thing in most cases, but I just like run to the problem. The point of friction is what they call it in the military. Like, put yourself in the point of friction. But that means your team doesn't get to take care of things. And if you have someone else that's responsible for that thing, then it can be really frustrating to them. So I was not doing a good enough job of communicating with him. I would solve problems without telling him. And it like was territorial. And that's not an immature thing from him. It was like actually not a good thing that I was doing. And then I had some issues with the way he was handling some things, and we were just butting heads, and every 6 months went to every 6 weeks to every week. We were having these big issues, and we almost sunk the business. I mean, our focus was on this problem and not on growing and developing and protecting the business. And by God's grace, we came to the same table on the same day with the same idea. that conversation could have gone either direction. It could have easily shut us, broken our partnership, and neither of us would have been near as good apart as we are together. But we both suggested that I buy part of his stake, which is unique. And I become the de facto equity majority owner and the final decision maker. Now, every day, I still treat him as an equal partner. He still makes a ton of decisions. But we know if there is a gridlock, that I'm the one that makes the decision. And he has done a great job of stepping into a number two role and honoring that. And it's worked out really, really well for us. Now, tactically, I don't think you actually technically, from an equity perspective, have to do 50 or 51-49. You can do decision-making in your legal docs. As a 51-49, like, this person has decision-making, gridlock-breaking authority, while still having a 50-50 technical ownership perspective. The cool thing about business is there's a lot of leeway in how you write the rules. Obviously there's a lot of ways you can break the rules, and that's not okay, but like, you can be really creative in these things. And we've seen that in a lot of the tech companies in the US over the last bunch of years, where Zuckerberg has like super mega control, even though he doesn't own that high of a percentage. He still has a lot higher percentage than anyone else, but it's not like he owns 51%, and there's no one that can touch him from a decision-making perspective. So I think you can solve that problem in creative ways. But at the end of the day, the quote I always use is, and this, I found this quote while we were fighting, was, it's not that one general is better than the other, it's that one general is better than two. Mm. It's not that one general is better than the other. It's not that I was better than my partner per se. It's just that we needed one person in charge. And that helped a lot for us and for our team.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic that you were able to have that conversation and work that out, because I think like there's going to be countless other examples like that out there. And like, the majority of the time, I expect we just don't work it out. So, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I guess in the early days, I mean, you go in, you've got this loss making business. You're doing decent like turnover, but you've got this ambition to get to the next stage. Like, how do you approach that first step? Is it about systems? Is it like, how do you get going?
So the first thing, I mean, I didn't know what I was doing, so let's not, I think this is a decent playbook. Mm-hmm. First thing, learn the stuff. Don't die. Rule number one, don't die. We weren't making money and we added my salary. So what do I got to do first? I got to figure out how to pay for me and learn the business. So I just showed up real early and stayed real late every day for the first, I don't know, I think it was 3 to 6 months. I was like, I'm going to make sure I'm the first. I'm not going to be here before every crew member and after every crew member, which is a lot, was a lot of hours. And then I put in some sort of like, I'm going to force myself to be there for 4 hours on Saturday. I only had one daughter at this point and she was super little, so I could pull that off. And my wife was very supportive. So get in, learn the business. And then I did this, I highly recommend this if you're going into business. I went through the P&L, the profit and loss statement, and went line by line on expenses. And you're not, I mean, there's probably some low-hanging fruit, and for us there was. But there's also like a lot, you just want to look at all the things. And it was just useful for me to like look at that thing and be like, hey, do we actually need this? And him be like, yes, and here's why. I was like, okay, I didn't know we had that. Hey, do we need this thing? He's like, I mean, maybe. What do you think? And then we'd work through that problem, right? And so I'd save $50 here a month and $100 here a month. And then there was two big ones that I found. One was our credit card processing negotiated. I mean, I think I saved us $40,000 a year at that point on credit card processing negotiation. And then the other big one, I don't remember what it was, but I feel like there was one other decent sized one. I think we saved some on, then we saved some on our insurance rate, but ended up spending more because we added more insurance, right? Mm-hmm. So like our rate dropped, but we added workman's comp at that point because we didn't have it before. And so I think that was it. And then the second thing, after I did that, I went through and did price changes. And that's super uncomfortable, but, and it took a lot of work. But I went through every customer and did the math on our dollar per man hour over the entire previous year using Excel wizardry which I wasn't capable of doing on my own. I'm pretty good, but I used an investment banker friend to write the formula for me to figure it out. And I mean, we raised a lot of prices, all of them, all of our routine maintenance prices. And between those two things, I paid for myself and gave us a little bit of space. And then I got, and that's really the first step. And that end of that, I knew the business better and we were break even or making a little bit of money. And after that, it was really, okay, how do we add customers, add services? And that's just the long slog. There's no silver bullet at that point. At least not for me. I wasn't good enough. I think if I went in now, like you drop me into that business now, I could probably accelerate that process, but it wouldn't be all that different. It's still a slog.
I mean, all you're really saying is you went into this business that was losing money, and you increased prices and cut costs, and suddenly you were slightly profitable.
Oh, isn't that super insightful?
Yeah.
I mean, we might blow some minds with this episode.
The fact that the business, and I'm sure like the person running it before had a lot of competencies, but the fact that they weren't able to do that, and like we see a lot of businesses out there that are in that situation, and it's really, I think there's lots of people out there who are trying to sell them silver bullets to like fix all those problems, and the problem is a lot of people go for that because they'll see it as the easy answer. But I mean, you're saying there that I like totally buy into is it obviously increase prices, cut costs, but then it's a grind, and just be a little bit better every day, just keep trying things, keep doing new things. And yeah, I mean, you're obviously the success story there, and I guess that's all you're still doing day to day is just trying to do things a bit better.
Yeah, and we're at the next phase now where the skills that you need to run a $2 million business are totally different than an $8 million business, which is totally different than, I don't know where the line is, it depends on the industry, but for us, it's going to be totally different than what is needed at I'll bet you we can get with a lot of these same skills, I'll bet you we can get to 25, but to go to 50, it's going to be a totally different set. And then to go to 100 is going to be a totally different set. So I think, and that's the plan. I mean, God willing, God could totally change that plan, but we'll become the largest residential landscaper in Texas, eventually over the next couple decades here. Decade. I'm going to say that. Decade.
Yeah, I've seen you write decade before, and I was going to ask you that.
But I'm going to have to grow up a lot. So.
Yeah, I think others, it's clear from the kind of content that you put out that you obviously like read a lot. And it's great to see some of the examples of things you're reading. I think one of those pieces that I was looking at was like where it was looking at what the skills needed, like you were touching on there, for a business of this size and this size and this size, and kind of like where you were now and how you're adapting to that. And I think that's the most clear thing from all of this is like, in order to succeed, you have to adapt. You have to almost like throw out the things that you were doing before and go, right, I need to be totally different now. How can I do that? And there's not many people who can do that. It seems that you're like super clear on that side of the business.
Yeah. And I would probably clarify that a little bit. I think you said it right, but I would clarify it a little bit and just say, it's not necessarily like a tech company where what worked is you got to do the opposite. Like we're getting better. We're doing the exact same thing, man. Like we're taking tall grass and we're making it short. We're taking mulch and we're from here and putting it in your yard. And we're just getting better at doing those things at a larger scale. My specific skill sets have to change from a utility tool that's a B on all these things to an A plus on these very small things. Being able to use my B-level skills to identify A's in each of those places. A framework from a hiring perspective is originally you want to hire people that can do 70% as well as you. And if you get two people that can do 70% as well as you, then that's 140% of you, right? But it's still frustrating because they're not as good as you. And then you want to be able to find people that are as good as you, one for one. And ultimately, at some scale, you get to where you can afford to find people that are better than you. And that's not, if I was better at this game, I'm talking to you, I would make a hard number, right? I would say at X dollars, you can 70% at X dollars in revenue, you can do 100% at X dollars, you can start to find. And for us, I think we probably started finding people that were better at the job than me and my partner at maybe, we got one or two people at 4 million. And then now we've got like six or seven that are like, yeah, you're just, that person is so much better than me at that job.
Yeah.
But there's still a whole bunch of roles that I could do better if you put me into it. I'm just not satisfied in it. It's not the best use of my skills.
No, I think that's dead right. And I really look at that myself. It's like where we're at now is that anyone coming into the business, yes, like roles like yours and mine, like we're going to be able to do lots of different things. Yeah. But you need to be able to do at least one thing better than me. If you focus on that, then I think you just gradually build up that capability that you need to have a system that's operating well above what you could do on your own, even at a smaller scale, to be able to get to the next level. It's an interesting challenge. What going to your like military experience, because I've spoken with and seen some really impressive businesses that have come from people who've come out of the military. Do you feel like that had an influence on your ability to like grow this business?
Yeah, absolutely. No, unquestionably the most formative experience for me from an operational and leadership perspective that I take. It's hard to even choose what the things were. I can give you some though. First of all, I spent some time in Iraq with Aussies and it was awesome. They were great. And I also got to spend some time with people from all over, Europe and Australia, and, there's different cultures across the branches, but I think that it generally applies, this idea of what the military does from a business perspective. But let's get a couple just like check boxes, right? So number one, you get a ton of responsibility from an asset and operational perspective very young, right? I was 22, 23, and I was in charge of 40 people. And like, looking back, I cringe because a bunch of stupid stuff and how I handled those people and didn't understand them and whatnot. But like I said earlier, you practice. And like, by year three, I was a totally different person than year one of leading 40 people, way better equipped for it. But I had, number of humans, how many 50-year-olds get to be in charge of 40 people? Very few, honestly. You know, like not very many people from a percentage perspective are in charge of 50 people at any point in their life, let alone 5 people. So that's one. Just number two, like you just deal with a bunch of equipment. Like you don't really realize how important that is from like a business perspective. It's just logistics and operations, right? Like you're just expected to move those 50 people, which requires 7 trucks or 8 trucks and X number of fuel and X number of gallons of water and X number of rounds. And what's the plan? And do you have a schedule? And you have to submit all that to your boss and argue for why you're doing it that way. And they tell you you're an idiot and you get feedback. And there's a very good culture of feedback in the system with like very specific rules. And so you feel like you can operate and learn and grow in that. And so just like a lot of experience that I didn't realize it was weird that I moved 40 trucks in the morning, right? Like, this is what you do. Everyone does it. Just do it. And if you don't do it, you don't get the job and you get demoted or whatever. So that was a big thing. And then those are some like hard takeaways. Some soft takeaways are just stress management. Like no one got hurt today. Yeah, we lost some money. We pissed someone off, but like no one got hurt. Or someone got hurt, but it was just their finger. We're going to be fine. That sucks. We'll deal with it. Whatever. So like stressful things just aren't stressful to me. Part of that's temperament, but part of that's just exposure to stress. In op tempo, like when you're gone for 7 months and you work every single day and you're overseas and there's life and death on the line, like you're the way you weigh problems is totally different. And I didn't even have near as kinetic an experience as a lot of people that do in the military. So there's that. And then I would say, just leading people older than you is a big one. So like, one of the weird things about being an officer is you go in and you've got guys that have been in the Marine Corps for 30 years, 40 years that salute you on day one, and that's super uncomfortable. And what they're doing is they're saluting the rank, not the person at that point. At some point, hopefully you earn actually saluting you, but you got to be in charge of a guy who's been doing this for 15 years. And like, hey man, I've been like shot at and fought a bunch of bad guys, and like I'm really good at my job, and you're telling me what to do. And that's part of the culture, and you just get used to that. And when do they help you and you help them? And from a blue collar perspective or a trade perspective, super useful, right? Because you end up with these plumbers or these electricians that have been doing it for 15 years, and you're going in and helping run it. I don't know how to fix that thing. That's not my job. My job is to help put you in a scenario where you can best succeed. Lean on you for the knowledge that I need on this specific technical problem. But I'm going to make the big decisions, and you're going to follow me. And if I'm worth following, you're going to stick around. And if I'm not, you're going to go find someone else to follow. And so you learn that in some cases in the military, but hopefully by the end, you've learned to do that effectively. And I got fortunate to be in charge of the operation over in Oman, for being next to Yemen. With 100 guys, I was in charge of 100 guys. My boss got hurt right before we went. So I was supposed to be number two, but he got hurt, so I was number one. Which it sucked, not that my boss, but it was an extraordinary experience for me, the level of responsibility over in the Middle East like that, and making sure I got 100 people over on the other side of the world and back with all their stuff and good help. Executed the mission. So, great experience. Really, really good for me. It doesn't go that well for everybody. I got very fortunate, but a lot of those lessons apply no matter what your experience has been.
Yeah. I mean, like, do you really believe that it was like fortune rather than the approach that you took?
Rather than what I took?
Than the approach that you took. So.
Yeah, no, like let's talk through. No. We can talk through that. So my worldview, first of all, is I believe that Jesus is my Lord and he is guiding my steps. So, but there is also this piece of free will and whatnot. We could talk through that, but I believe very firmly that I was placed in positions left and right that were extraordinarily providential. My first base that I got put on was just so great for my wife and I. It helped really well for her. The unit I was put in was awesome. I ended up with a really good boss by the end. I got to deploy really early because one other guy got kicked out of his deployment. So I got a really early good experience, which most of my peers didn't get. That leveled me up for the ability to do that operation I just talked about. And that leveled me up for being in charge of the school that I was at the end. All those things absolutely built on each other because I proved competence throughout it. But I mean, there's so much there that could have been. You're a number and you can get put in a different place easily and by needs of the military. And I was fortunate in all the places I landed. And that's part of the reason I got, is I just wasn't going to get that lucky anymore. Probably. So I just came back.
So that was it. Was it the reason for coming out was really like,
that was certainly part of it. Yeah, part of it. But also just like we had our first daughter, and even on a low op tempo world, I was still gone 10 nights a month. I mean, like, and when I was busier, gone way more, right? Yeah. And so I liked that. It was fun. It was good for that season. It was, my marriage didn't suffer from that specifically. Obviously the 7 months away was hard in the lead up to that, but the 10 night a month, we were good at it. But it wasn't going to be a good play for my family. Let me rephrase that. If I had done it, God told me to do it, and I did it, I'm sure it would have been fine. Good. But it's not what we decided to do. So here we are.
Cool. And so we've talked about actually like going into the business, growing it, getting to a certain point. But recently, you went through an acquisition, didn't you? You acquired another sort of friendly competitor. Can you talk to us a bit about what made you make that decision, how it came about, and how it's gone?
Absolutely. So one of the things people struggle to get into small business if they want to buy into a business. Once you're in a small business, deal flow comes a lot easier. So finding your first deal is hard. And then you end up in all these adjacent conversations because you're not that annoying person looking for a business, especially if you become competent and prove competence. Then you just like other, you want to meet with other business owners. They want to meet with you. They're far more likely to try to sell to you because they know you're not going to blow the thing up and their team and employees and customers and stuff. So I was in this business. I proved competence over 7 years. And somewhere in there, I started having lunch with this guy. I have lunch with a lot of small business people, specifically in landscaping, if I can, because I want to play this out. And I, two guys specifically that like run very similar businesses to me. And one of them, I thought I was going to get a chance at buying like pretty soon. I ask him all the time. I guess there's three guys that I talk to pretty regularly, but one of them I thought for sure. But one of the other guys was this guy that I ended up buying his business. And I thought I was going to get a chance at it like 10 years from now. Like have lunch once every 6 months, hang out, learn some things, call him if you got a question or a problem, call him if you got a joke that you know he'll get because it's your industry, right? And we went to lunch, we hung out for an hour, and at the very end, like we talked for an hour about all sorts of stuff, told stories, enjoyed our quesadillas. You know, I ate some enchiladas, that's what I did, and iced tea. And he, at the end, was like, hey, I'm thinking about this thing. You want to buy it? And I was like, yeah, let's work through the problem. And I didn't tell my business partner because I didn't want to stress him out. And like a week later, we were in an EOS meeting. And one of our first ones, I don't know if you know what EOS is, it's the Entrepreneurial Operating System. It's like a business operating platform. We can talk about that. It's been very valuable for us. But, and I just kind of like, the team was like, hey, we were working through what our vision was for the future. And we had decided we wanted to be the largest residential landscaping company in Texas within the next decade. And I was like, well, I got this opportunity. And they're all like, shit, dude, come on. You didn't tell us about this? You're going to tell us this right now? And I was like, well, I mean, I didn't want to stress you out. And they thought it was funny and annoying because I didn't do that. And so we went through the process, and I mean, it's our first one. Again, you can't expect to be great at something your first shot. We'd never done it before, at least at this scale. And we were about a $6 million business buying a $2 million business. And there was a lot of reasons that it was a really good idea. They used the same software as us. Software matters, folks. You should look into the best possible software around. They used the same subs as us. They were in the same geography as us. They did generally the same type of projects as us. So it was a really good fit, and at least on paper, right? And we went back and forth, and I highly recommend bringing at least in somebody that's done these things before as you work through that process emotionally. You get attached to it. You want it to work. It's easy for tens of thousands of dollars to be little things. And obviously on a day-to-day basis, that's not a little thing, but when you're looking at transactions, we ended up paying somewhere close to 400. And all in all with all the little pieces and things, right? And it's 400 or 10K here, 10, 7K here, all that stuff just doesn't feel like it's important. And then you like get to the end of it and you're like, that's a big number. I wish I'd thought about that 10K. Yeah. And so having some friends that really work through the problem with me helped me understand some of the nuances and be like, no, dude, you should fight for that. Well, I don't want to blow it up. Like, you're not going to blow it up. This is how it works. You keep fighting for that. That was super helpful in the process. And we ended up getting it done. And so that, like, ask me any questions you want about pre-close now, and then I'll go into close and beyond.
Yeah. So, and like, it's interesting that the advice that you were taking there, what kind of backgrounds do those people have?
A dear friend of mine was like an M&A guy and small business M&A guy. So blue collar M&A guy, like he's done a handful of these things. He had the spreadsheets to walk you through. He is really emotionally intelligent. One of my like really smart, emotionally intelligent friends that's like really good at building relationships. So he was good at helping me read how to push on this thing. And you really just need somebody to balance you out. My business partner did that some, but I wanted him to really focus on running day to day at that point. But like he played an important role in helping me work through a valuation, which this thing was not easy to value because they didn't make money last year. And so you couldn't do any kind of multiples. There was no EBITDA multiple, right? It would turn into a zero. But like the trucks, what are those things worth? Getting an employee base, how much is that? How much is this client list worth? How much do we value, you know, add those things together, get yourself some sort of value. That's how we ended up having to get there. And then we had to like argue about that with the seller. And no, I think the trucks are actually worth this much. And well, that's not our way of viewing it. And he helped me with that a lot. And then how much do I want to put into the legal docs? Is some of the snarkier, trickier things, not tricky as in bad, but like more aggressive things from a paperwork or a deal structure perspective. Do I want that to be in there? Ultimately, we paid him more, but we got our terms, right? I'm sure you've heard the term, my price, your terms, your price, my terms. We ultimately gave a little bit on price to get some terms, and ultimately that was a good thing for us. Perspective and one. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. I think you know, that's incredibly valuable. I talk to people who are like struggling with decisions on selling, and the majority of them don't have those networks around them. So I think, you know, that's the most valuable thing with any of this. It's like, I want to talk to someone who's done this yeah, before, like how they've done it, where they've like, that's going to make all the difference. And then was it, in terms of that deal, structure, was it very much it's done, previous owner walks away, and you just get everything and go next day kind of thing? Or
No, the answer is no. So I mean, he was at my office yesterday, and we're 3 months out, right? But not involved at all day to day pretty quickly. So there was a price point with a hold back. And that price point was allocated across assets and goodwill. So it's an asset purchase technically. And then that's the first thing. And then we had a contractor agreement where I was paying him for the next 4 years as a contractor. Now, what was surprising to me is that he didn't want to make that a note payable, like a note, like a seller note. He wanted to make it a contractor deal. And that actually benefits us because it's pre-tax money. So if we're in a 35% tax bracket and I'm going to pay him $100, then I just saved myself $35 in taxes or in net payout, right? Whereas if it had been a seller note and I'm paying him $100 on a seller note, it doesn't go onto my P&L. It doesn't matter from a tax perspective. So that was actually better for us than a seller note perspective. And it's also a lower risk. It's a higher risk for proposition for him, right? Like if we die, he doesn't get paid, or he's not on the cap table to get paid, whatever the term is. He's not on the balance sheet to get paid. But I think that could benefit him from a tax perspective if he keeps his personal income super low over the next 4 years, and he ends up in a lower tax bracket than if he was counting like this year's up gains or whatever he ends up paying. So who knows? That's what he wanted to do. It was better for me. I'm great with it. And then we ended up having a bunch of issues. So post-acquisition, close, right? I'll come to like the day of closing because it's a good story. But post-close, we've had a bunch of issues with the vehicles specifically. Now, we knew that they were old. We could have certainly done a better job in due diligence of digging into that. That's one of the big takeaways, and really getting them inspected and stuff. But philosophically, we have a totally different view of vehicles than he did. We're very tight on our vehicles and like very up to date. And it's actually kind of like a funny contentious point for me and my business partner. I think my business partner is right, but he does the very top of the line stuff all the time. Like we're going to be 100% up to date on all of the things all of the time. And that is great. And I'm really glad we do that, but it's just hard. And this other guy was like, we're going to do, I wouldn't say as little as possible, because I don't want to insult. It's not an insult to him. He pushed it. And he ran older vehicles and made sure that they kept running, hopefully, but wasn't going to make the investment for the long-term health of that vehicle. And so we ended up with just some things that we're not going to even get close to matching our personal standards. And so we had to end up being a negotiation. I'm sure you got it. check this morning from him. I'm getting some of that money back because we have the language in our legal docs that walked through what we expected from these vehicles. And that was super uncomfortable to work through. You don't ever want to do a clawback if you can. You really want that to, that was weird because we couldn't do it in a seller note. So it wasn't like we took it off the back end of his contractor agreement because that's technically separate. So we had to get money back from him in a check or change the contractor agreement, and we didn't want to do that.
Yeah,
what else?
What about the team? I'm interested in team. Like, was that something that you talked to pre-close and like how?
Yeah, so I mean, that's the spicy story.
Yeah,
is he didn't tell any of his team before the day of. Generally that would be a red flag if you're ever buying one of these things and they're not telling their team. That's a red flag. But red flags don't always mean, like in this case, I don't think he was being suspect or anything like that. I think he was just genuinely apprehensive about how they would respond. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't like trying to hide them from me. He was trying to hide it from them to some extent. And so if I was to do this again, I would have insisted that he tell, I think, about three of the people. We ended up, it was like 23, 24 people. And some of his longest lasting employees, I think, should have had the opportunity to prepare for that. But I walked in the morning with my service team manager, and this guy was like, "Hey, this is what's happening." And I was like, "I'm your new boss." And I had a whole speech and I did okay on that. I actually did pretty well with the office team, but man, there's a great acronym. SARA: shock, anger, resentment, acceptance, hope. Mm. And you could just watch the cycle. People do it at different spaces, but like complete shock and they quit listening. Really angry, really resentful. Okay, maybe this will work out. Now I'm back to angry, you know, like, and then eventually move through to hope. And then we went over to his shop to talk to his crew. And I had three people quit before they left the lot. We had one person quit within the first 30 seconds. They just stood up and was like, "I'm out." And was like,
"Did you ever get
shocking
for that? Like, do you know why?"
I think there's not a good reason. For someone to do that, there's not a good reason, right? And then I think he was just wanted attention and just sensed that we were going to be a different type of thing, and he was on the way out already. I don't know.
Yeah.
His brother quit. His brother ended up coming back and asking for a job and then not showing up for the job after we gave it to him. And then another guy just drove off and we never talked to him again. And I fired one guy, unfortunately. So of the 25, I've lost four within a couple hours. One guy got fired because he had previously worked for us. So it's not that he technically got fired as much as he just wasn't rehired with the asset purchase.
Yeah.
He had worked for us. He had had some issues. But we weren't working. And since then, it's been really challenging. So the people, I don't know what a good baseline is. I think it obviously depends on the business and how you're going to run it and stuff. But like, we just kind of totally brought them into our business as opposed to running two separate businesses because we were 10 minutes away from them. We rent a similar business. We have one shop and one of the savings on the rent. We just drove the trucks over to our place and started operating. We've lost probably 40% at this point. And a lot of that was not as good as our goal. Our goal was to keep 75%. So we're down to 60%. But a lot of that's been cultural. It's just we have different standards and we're going to run the business slightly differently in some ways that are significant. And we're on board. Like, no, I don't want to work like that. I don't want you. We have GPS in the truck, so they didn't. Like, because we're going to make sure that you're going to keep working. You do your job. You're great. We're not going to bother you at all. But, like, you're not going to go and hang out somewhere. Stuff like that. Some food issues that were worked through about we really help each other out. Our teams do. Like, if you can't get your stuff done and this crew's done, they're going to help you. And that's not how their crews operated. And some of their team was not okay with that. And it's like, no, you're going to do this or you're not going to work here. Like, this is how we care about serving each other. We have a servant mindset core value. You don't do that, you're not going to be a part of our team. And then they just self-selected out, or we fired them after some specifics conversations. And so, yeah, we've had a handful of turnover. It's been what I'll end with this. Anyone that's done a bunch of these things would tell you all my stories are super normal. I've never done one of these things, so it doesn't feel normal.
Yeah. I mean, what would you do differently if you were doing it again? Which I'm sure you might do.
Yeah, one of my tasks for the next 6 weeks is to really do some collection on the after action. And I'll write a bunch about this on the next. But there's some tactical things around assets I'd do differently in preparation. There are some insistences I would make on him telling some of his key team members. I didn't do a good enough job in due diligence of understanding his services, which has put us in a bit of a bind. There's some things like, hey, we mow. How many mows do you have? And they're like, 650 mows. It's like, okay, cool. Great. I'd love to have 650 mows. And then we pull it in. It's like, well, this one's mowing and weeding. That's not mowing. That's different. It's like, no, it's mow. Like, no, that's a totally different thing. That's a whole bunch of work for us to figure out. And there's like 300 of those. So we're about to start working through that. Big problem. We're going to lose a lot of customers on that. That's okay. It wasn't something we couldn't overcome. It's just, I wish we had known before. I could have done better on that first day of communicating, understanding how to speak to that team in the way that they needed to be spoken to, communicated with. Mm. There's a lot that we did right. This isn't going to be a home run. It's not going to sink us. It's going to be a single, double, maybe. But I don't think it's fair to judge it until, like, to really grade it until a year out.
Yeah.
Right now, I just need to write down all the things that we remember so that we, next time we do it, we're ready. We won't do one this year, another one this year. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how things go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, you talked at the start about almost with a bit of reluctance about having not gone from 0 to 1, has gone to 1 to 8, I'm sure well beyond that. Do you feel like you will at some point go and try and do 0 to 1, or do you just go, well, I'm just gonna keep building what I've got. I've got something.
I have zero desire to personally go from 0 to 1. I don't think it fits my skill set. It's a different skill set, right? That grinds and the, you got to be able to do everything. I'm just not, that's not who I am. I am better at running a team. God made me to run a team. That's what I do, you know? I don't know if I'm going to be the best person to run this business past 20. I feel very confident I'll be ready to run it to 20. But if I'm not the best person past 20, I need to find that person. I have the responsibility to the team. The only situation in which I would start from 0 and go to 1 is where I have an unfair advantage. Right? And what that would mean is we currently sub our fertilization. We've got over 500 clients in that. And if I can find the right guy or two, and I can basically just start that business with a huge leg up. It wouldn't be starting from 0 to 1. It would be starting from like 0.1, 0.5 to 1, right? Like, but it's a new business. Or an air, like a pool maintenance company where I have deep expertise in selling, deeper expertise in selling to residences, and I have a lot of connections to residences where I can have like, here, hey, we're connected to Top Choice Lawn Care. You get the phone number already. You know, you can Google Maps. These are the people, and this is the day that they mow their lawn. So, hey, we know you get mowed on Tuesday, so can we come on Wednesday? Stuff like that. It's just cheating. Like, I'm just not. I have some close friends that have started a handful of businesses recently in the last 2 years, 3 years, and they're blowing up. They're already bigger than me in some cases, but it's because they cheat. Like, they, cheating is the wrong word. They had unfair advantage. They knew all the customers. And so they had a relationship with all the customers, and they had proven themselves in that industry already. It didn't feel like starting from zero because they knew on day 4, they were going to be at 1. That's the only way I would start. I'm not going to go and start something I don't know. That's just not who I am, not where I'm at.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And so social media, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm very aware you put a big investment into what you do on X, formerly known as Twitter. Well, tell us firstly how people follow you, because I think that's, this is how they follow the next, how the story unfolds from here. But secondly, how you went about deciding to do that and what's the strategy there? And
yeah, so you just search Nolan Gore and I think you'll find me. I look like this. I have this hat on in there or something, but my handle is Leadership Acad 1, like Leadership Academy, because I used to run an organization that did that. That did like a bunch of mentorship for young people. The reason I started is it was about 3 a.m. and I was just full of caffeine and nicotine in the hospital, because my wife was in the hospital. And I was like, this is a good idea. This is what I need in life, to get sucked into a Twitter rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And I did. Since then, I have quit nicotine, which is hard, and I am still addicted to Twitter. So we'll see. But my current plan is to continue, because it has been a tremendous amount of fun and value. Why am I there? I don't know yet. But what I tell people is it is fun for me. And I like helping people, and I am starting to realize what of my stuff actually helps people, like understand what we do and why, and be encouraging and realize that their problem isn't unique to them. It's what we all feel, or at least a lot of us feel. And those crazy stories are not that crazy. It's what we do, you know. It's an outlet for me to be like, oh, cool. Me getting sued is not that weird. That's what I posted yesterday. I was like, getting sued, here's the situation, without being too specific, because I don't want to get myself in legal trouble. And just the people came out of the woodworks being like, oh, this is, oh, okay, cool. That's not that abnormal. I'll be okay. The last point on it is, it's increasing my surface area of luck, right? I don't know what the ultimate benefit's going to be, but I expect that there's some outcomes. Like we wouldn't be talking if I hadn't been playing that game. And so where do I take it? There's obviously a lot of value. It's just whether or not it's worth the cost in time and energy to put it there. And so far I'm still full steam ahead. I expect to be posting multiple times a day for the next year plus. And I'm going to see where it goes. And so does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And like, how do you manage it there? Because I think there's a lot of, it's intangible benefits, but like, I think for most people, they think it's a good idea, but how do they keep doing it regularly? And how do they do you carve out a certain amount of time each day, or like, how's it work?
Yeah. So I use a planner, not for every post, but I try to keep a rhythm up, where I'm posting 3 times a day minimum. I can go pretty deep on tactics here, but just kind of high level. People want authenticity. They don't want whatever you're good at, whatever you do, go talk about that. Don't talk about business books. Talk about business books in the context of being a lawn care operator and how it applied to your world. Took me a while to figure that out. People don't like anonymous accounts as much. Let me get out of the tactical world. Too tactical. One thing I do, which I think is funny and useful, is I'll go to ChatGPT and be like, hey, I want to write 25 blog posts on being a small business operator. Give me 25 topics. And 20 of them are useful. And I don't follow it exactly, but I'll just go into a planner and be like, number one, SEO. Okay, this is how I think about SEO. Okay, number two, like legal reviews. Oh man, you got to have a good legal guy. You can really get yourself in trouble. Here's a situation I got myself in trouble. Number three, think about insurance. Okay, insurance is super important. You should have that stuff. And this is why. And here's a situation where insurance saved my ass. Number four, how do you think about growing your business? Well, I don't have any idea. I'm just trying to figure it out every day. And if you have any ideas, let me know. Like, how to build a great website. Honestly, no idea. I use WordPress. What do you guys think? Is WordPress good? And everyone's like, no, WordPress sucks. They're like, yeah, no, it's good. And they just get like a little Twitter fight on there.
Yeah.
And it definitely changes. Like, your first 1,000 followers is hand-to-hand combat. It's all about comments. It's all about DMs. It's all about little groups that help each other. And then after that, it's not like that. That's a switch. It definitely has changed after that. You gain more credibility, and it's really more about your own content And as you get bigger and bigger, it becomes more and more about your own content and less about interaction. The last most important thing that I can say is Twitter, of all the social medias, is the most personally social. So like if you end up in, like I have a couple of groups of people that we do comment on our stuff, each other's stuff every day. Like I make, it holds me accountable. I post one thing in that group every day and they all comment on it and I comment on all their stuff. And that's my time for the day. And then maybe a couple more times in the week, I'll come up with ideas. I'll be working on something like, oh, this is a good idea. And I'll just like go over to my planner, cut and paste it in there, write it up in some way, plan it for Saturday, whatever the next post is, and just keep moving. And those, but those groups are really big for getting traction. And that's helped a lot. And if you put those your own together, then you have more credibility and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I don't know if that answers.
Yeah, no, I think it does. I think there's lots of actionable tips there. And I think the other thing is I'd say about why people should follow you is because you do, as well as being entirely transparent about the process and what you're going through, you put things in there that other people have taken and put into practice in their own business. Like I think the other day you put in place, this is my sort of follow-up schedule on quotes, and that's something that I know a lot of businesses don't do very well, and your point of view is very much, well, they asked for this thing, like you need to very almost aggressively like follow up until, like, because what's the worst that can happen? They'll say no, and then you know you, that's not a good lead, I'll move on to the next one. So yeah, like I very much encourage people to follow you. I'm very also aware that you, you've got a crack on. I've got plenty of other questions I'd like to ask you, but I do want to thank you for the time that you've given me and the listeners. And yeah, hope to keep in touch and talk again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Super fun. Guys, Blue Collar World is awesome. Make sure you have the best possible software and technology to do it right.
Yeah. Check out the market. Plenty of options are available.
Right.
Cheers. That's it from our 50 Shades of Trade podcast. Thanks to Nolan Gore for joining us. Please do like, comment, share, and leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. Also, check out Payaka. If you are a field service business looking to scale, we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and please join us next time.